This is F1 Debrief, There Must Be Disco. Coming up on this week's show, we discuss the entry list, the Haraf testing, plus we catch up with some feedback and important housekeeping. I quite like this fortnightly podcasting business because there's lots and lots of news to catch up on.
Is there really?
On the last debrief, we didn't know what was happening with BMW. We didn't know what was happening with Toyota. We weren't sure about Canada. We hadn't heard of any of the young drivers. And it was all about Braun and Mercedes.
And what's changed now?
Everything.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for McLaren as they've extended their partnership with Tag Heuer. I couldn't see how long for, but their press release was headed up Tag.
Oh my lord.
Extends 25-year partnership. I thought for a minute they were signing up for another 25 years, which would just be silly. There were pictures of Hamilton in a race suit, which I thought was over the top for a press conference, but he drove Ayrton Senna's car around the technology center.
About 10 yards.
Well,
a
little bit.
He could have gone farther if he got out and pushed it.
It's been a bad week for Jonathan Summerton, who's been tweeting a lot about his availability for an F1 drive. It's all well and good, drivers using Twitter, we encourage that kind of thing. But, for instance, a tweet from Mr. Summerton. So wonder if Lotus need an American F1 driver, at Tony Fernandez. I'm available and would love to represent Lotus and Asia Air.
Bet you would.
Does he really think they're going to choose their drivers off of Twitter?
Maybe we're missing a trick.
I think we should tweet him as well.
Wait, what are we going to say?
I passed my driving test.
What can I drive for you?
Yeah. There was another one that said, okay, so for any press or fans or anything, I am willing to do interviews whenever or answer any questions, feel free. Now, it's good that he's making himself available, but it does seem just a little bit desperate.
I think we should get Kathy to get Jonathan Summerton on the line because, you know, if he's willing to do interviews with anyone, I know we are the bottom of the food chain when it comes to PR, but, you know, we are anyone.
Well, yeah, we're not press. We're not particularly fans of his, but I guess we come under anything.
I have no idea who he is.
It's been a good week for Massa, who got back behind the wheel of a kart for his charity event in Brazil. It was his first competitive appearance since the accident, and he finished third in the opening leg behind Michael Schumacher and Liuzzi. He won the second leg the next day, beating Mr. Schumacher. This weekend, he also won another karting race, the Gran Viana 500 miles. I thought it was odd, though, because he's returning to fitness, but he said, I spent a huge amount of time in front of my TV set just watching Formula One and dreaming about the moment to come back.
Don't we all?
I never had him down as a couch potato.
Lazy git.
It was also a good week for him because he became a father.
Aw.
It's been a bad week for the future of the French Grand Prix as the potential new site that was being eyed up for a race earlier in the year has come to nothing. Local authorities have scrapped their plans. There's a glimmer of hope in the form of the Paul Ricard circuit, but France is becoming the new British GP. Will they, won't they? The FFSA aren't happy either. They say that the ability to host an international sporting fixture does a lot for a country's image.
I like that you are trying to avoid saying the name of the people involved.
It was the new site that isn't going to be anymore. I don't need to know how to say it.
Just not bothered. You're doing well with pronunciation today.
News and views.
The FIA released the entry list for the 2010 season this week, and it was quite empty in terms of drivers, as you would expect, because we don't know anything.
Well, you say as you would expect this year, yes, but previously it's normally more full than it was.
Lots and lots of to be confirmed. They did manage to out Manor Grand Prix as Virgin Racing, though.
That, yes, busted.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of PR has gone to the wall.
Well, they still haven't confirmed it yet. It's like they're pretending that nothing happened. The FIA didn't really say that.
It's a complete mess because their own website, Virgin Media's website, claimed that there would be an announcement on Tuesday and that never happened. It's obviously been put back until people forget that the takeover has already been announced and they will re-announce it when it suits them.
The entry list also had Red Bull with Renault engines, but Christian Horner said, I wouldn't read too much into the entry list. We're obliged to put an engine as per the regulations, but we are allowed to change the engine at any point up until the first race.
Well, that's good to know. Are all the Cosworth teams now going to switch? Because there was a bit of controversy suggesting that you had to, in order to get an entry into the 2010 championship, you had to have a Cosworth engine on your entry form. But if it's not too late to change it, why can't everybody change before the start of the year?
Well, that is a good question. There was talk in the comments that they would face fines and penalties if they changed it, but he seems to think he has time up until the first Grand Prix.
I don't think that's going to happen before the first Grand Prix. I don't see any fines being handed out. It's just the thing is, with this entry list, it's all nonsense, isn't it? Because there's a lot of TBAs driving for a lot of teams.
Yeah, gets around a bit.
Now you have to put these the engine you're using down on the entry form. But Dallara seem to be down as an engine manufacturer, which is unusual. They do engines, but we thought they were doing the chassis. And it turns out that whatever's written down on this official entry list is in a state of flux until the first race of the year. So what is the point of just putting that in the first place?
Well, the other bit of confusion was with Toro Rosso, because they confirmed Buemi on the entry list, which we didn't realise he was signed up already.
No, well, I missed that press release. But then again, Toro Rosso are rubbish with their press releases.
But they missed off Aljustwery, and his management said that was a bit of a surprise because they've had a contract for a few months now.
Yes. Actually, I don't know if it's been a few months or a few weeks, but it looks like it was signed a bit too late in order to make this FIA entry list. So what they've done, they've put out a badly formatted and not last minute list, which is completely and utterly incorrect. So it's official, but just disregard it and then just keep an eye on the news and see who's really driving it and what engines they're really using.
In the comments, everyone is saying that Dallara or whatever, they are the chassis and not the engine manufacturers.
That is what I understood it to be. However, there is no engine listed for Campos Meta, and you just mentioned that Christian Horner said
they were obliged to put an engine, but so, Campos haven't.
So Campos haven't. And there's enough characters within in the list for the full name to be listed, and therefore that's not the omission. And it's down there twice, so the mistake has been made twice. So therefore, I am still completely in the dark as to what engine Campos Meta 1 will be running.
At the time the entry list came out, there were only 12 teams on there, but Toyota confirmed they weren't going to be selling their entry to anyone else, so they gave it back to the FIA.
Oh, which was nice of them.
Yeah. The FIA quickly announced that Sauber were granted the 13th place on the list, which is good news, but it does seem a bit odd because last time this happened, didn't they have to, everyone had to resubmit their entries, or they had to go back into the pool and be picked out again?
It would be churlish for the FIA to deny a team with the facilities that BMW have given Peter Sauber and the experience and the strength and depth of the team, for the FIA to turn around and say, actually, we don't think you're worthy to have this entry, that wouldn't come across well. Also, I suspect the FIA are glad to see the back of Cadback.
Now, when BMW first announced they were pulling out, we had quite a dire voicemail from RG, didn't we? It was heartbreaking.
He was a bit depressed about the entire affair.
So you can imagine he was keen to get in touch with us again once he had this good news.
Hey, RG here. Well, you may remember a few weeks ago I was really depressed and sad and everything after BMW left the board. Now, Thursday evening, I'm absolutely delighted and absolutely feeling absolutely crazy. It's fantastic news. Sauber back in the sport, brilliant. It's awesome. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant, isn't it? Pierre Sauber is a god, I think. And, you know, him back in the sport, Sauber back in the sport, everything is right in the sport again, I think. Just with this one thing. Maybe going over the top, but I do that. And, you know, I just can't believe it's fantastic. Born GP-esque, probably, but I don't care. Probably go on and win the championship next year, I hope. But, you know, I can't wait. You know, hopefully. And might see Kleene and Petrov next year. That's what I'm predicting. And I just can't wait now. I'm 2020 now. Go on, Bahrain. Hurry, please. Too excited to wait now.
I am glad that RG is happy. However, I do not want to see Bahrain just yet. Let's not be having any of that.
No, we are not ready for that yet. But he's definitely much happier now, which is good news. So like he said, Peter Sauber is back in charge. Possibly Nick Heidfeld might have a seat. We're not sure about that. They've got Ferrari engines and they don't have Kimi.
No, that's a shame. Otherwise, that would have been a blast from the past, wouldn't it?
It really would have.
Kimi has gone, unfortunately. So good news for Sauber fans. Bad news for Kimi fans.
Yeah. We did suspect that Kimi wouldn't be back because he said he was only coming back for McLaren, and we talked about that a lot in the last show. But now he's confirmed that he will be driving in the World Rally Championship next year for Citroën.
Which is Formula One's loss and World Rally Championship's gain.
He might be back in 2011, but we just don't know.
The rumour doing the rounds, which is more than likely people putting two and two together, is because he's in a Red Bull-sponsored Citroën, that next year he might return to F1 in the Red Bull team, presumably to replace a vacating Mark Webber. However, there is nothing more to that than
speculation.
And I suspect, actually, that he will enjoy rallying a lot more than he enjoyed driving in Formula One. I think it'll suit him, it'll suit his driving style, and he may not even want to come back.
But it is good to see names coming back into the sport, and Sauber is a popular returnee.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of love for BMW. I get the impression that a lot of people supporting the team were merely supporting what the team used to be. And it's good because Peter Sauber commands a lot of respect in the paddock. We trust him to do a good job. And it's good to see that the team are back in his hands. I forget why he wanted to dispose of the team to BMW in the first place. But thankfully, they did keep his name and they have passed the team back to his capable hands. I hope that they are going to support him in the same way that Honda supported Ross Brawn and not just leave him in the lurch to find sponsors and all that business, because at the moment it's not entirely clear how the man is going to fund his operation.
No, well, Mario Tyson said, "The team can now turn its full attention to preparing for the forthcoming season. We have no doubt that Peter Sauber and his team will justify their nomination through good performance, and we wish them all every success in the future," which is kind of distancing them from him a bit, isn't it? But then Sauber said, "This is excellent news for the workforce in Hinwil. After many weeks of uncertainty, we have finally secured our place on the grid for 2010. Now we can enter into concrete negotiations with drivers and sponsors."
Brilliant stuff.
So the good work starts now.
That's what we're looking forward to. And hopefully they've continued to work on their chassis and that they'll have something race-worthy for next year. And I do not think, sadly, that they're going to do a Ross Brawn. As RG maybe is, I think it's a little bit of wishful thinking from the man there. But I suspect that, you know, they won't embarrass themselves, and that's the important thing.
Stevens just said in the comments, "Sauber can't be any worse than BMW were this season."
That's a blooming good point. Yes. They couldn't be worse, could they? I guess they could finish behind the brand new teams. I don't think that's going to happen. BMW made a right old mess of 2009, and surely Peter will make a much better fist of it next year.
They'll no doubt do a better job than Toyota as well. But it is sad news, obviously, because Toyota have been laying off all their staff from the team. Joe Sayward reported on it and he said 500 jobs are being axed at Toyota Motorsport in Cologne. It's expected that there will be 150 staff left when the layoffs are finished. They'll continue to work for Toyota on other projects such as road car tuning and building other racing machinery for the Japanese manufacturer. Well, actually, that's 150 jobs more than I thought there'd be left.
Well, even if Toyota remained in Formula One, the resource restriction agreement would have seen them lay off quite a considerable number of those people. So the jobs are always going to go, and it's a shame. It's not good for the people involved. It's a terrible time of the year for this to happen, obviously just before Christmas, and a lot of people knowing they're going to be out of work and looking for new work next year. Thankfully, there are new teams in Formula One who might be able to take up some of that slack. So let's hope that the people get repositioned in other Formula One teams in other countries.
I think Joe did say that they'll be getting settlements and things, so it might not be too bad.
Good. And it's been expected. I mean, it's not out of the blue. And that's the way it is. And you know, good luck to the 150 people who do remain there. Lord knows what they're going to be doing, but I hope they're more successful at whatever that is than they were at F1.
There was lots and lots of new stuff to digest this week because we had the young driver test in Jerez.
Bit of a learning curve.
Yeah, it was really good. Well, I say it was really good. There wasn't that much interest to start with, was there?
In terms of in the comments, I was a bit disappointed because we put up a thread for Tuesday and obviously I don't get up that early in the morning.
I was struggling with internet connections as well.
Yes, and when I logged on to see what the news in Jerez was, there was no news, and I thought for a second I actually got the completely the wrong day. Such was the ambivalence towards what was going on in the south of Spain. So I thought, I came to the conclusion that nobody actually gave a damn, which was a shame because I was quite excited by it myself.
Yeah, but we cared. So when I did get my internet connectivity sorted out, which was on Thursday, there was a lot more conversation happening.
It was a bit late, though. The test was almost over by then.
Yeah, well, I would have done better if I could have.
Yes.
Anyway, we learned lots and lots of stuff because some of the problems that people were coming up with was that there is no information out there.
It's unfortunate that with the Formula One team's organisation, they're trying to make Formula One more accessible for fans. They're trying to make it, trying to educate the people, the armchair fans, and they're trying to give them more information at races. However, it looks like testing has been completely overlooked. First, they've banned all mid-season testing, which obviously we've talked about in the past. We're not a big fan of the removal of that entertainment from our calendar, and they're not making it any easier to find out what's going on during a test as it happens.
No, I mean, we had two sites that had times and updates, but they were not in English. We had some people tweeting, and that was about it, actually. Some photos every now and again.
It could be argued that the likes of Autosupport could be covering it.
Yeah.
But I guess if people aren't that interested in it, it's not a cost-effective way to run a business. But I just think
that it's difficult to be interested in something when you don't know about it. I mean, a lot of people were saying, well, I don't care about these drivers, but you never will care about them unless you watch what they do and learn about them. I didn't care about Daniel Ricciardo at the beginning of the week, and now I do.
That's true. That is true. What I did notice from a lot of the pictures, there were people sat on the pit wall looking at TV screens, and those TV screens featured video from the track. So there were some cameras, maybe security cameras or something, but there were cameras looking at the track. I don't see why that couldn't have been live streamed to us, because it's already being filmed. How much would it cost the teams to get together to broadcast that on the web?
No, and there is the argument that they don't want us to know what's happening out there, but then why would they tweet it? Why would they tell us anything about it at all?
Well, it's free promotion for their sponsors. I mean, all the cars were running in their full livery with all the advertising in full display, and it's additional exposure for their sponsors, for which they should be gaining income. I mean, I don't know why they don't monetize it. I don't know why they don't say, look, we're out here testing. There's all these pictures. You know, people are taking photographs. People are interested in this. Pay us more money to put your logo and your brand on our car, or even have special testing liveries where companies can get exposure on a Formula One car for a lower cost and fund it that way. There's lots of things they could do. They just don't seem to be that bothered or that interested in exploring them.
But we did the best we could. We followed all the information we could get our hands on, and we did learn some things. So Ricciardo, like I mentioned, he stood out because he was both quite fast and very, very smiley.
He's like a young Vettel.
He just keeps on smiling. Every picture I saw of him, he had big, wide grin on his face, and he was happy to talk to the media and big up his desire to get a seat in Formula One.
I get the impression you're a fan.
Yeah, well, I like smiley drivers.
What I did note is that another of your interests was driving.
Yes.
During the test, Lucas Degrassi, and you paid more attention to Ricciardo than you did to Degrassi.
Yeah, but Degrassi was so very midfield.
Yes, he was in a Renault.
He wasn't slowest.
He was never going to be fastest in that thing, was he?
He wasn't slowest, he wasn't fastest, and the midfield is just so boring.
Right, okay, you're into winners, clearly.
Or losers, but not in the middle. We also learnt that Ferrari just want to keep up on signing up drivers all the time.
Goodness me, how many drivers do they have now?
I think they have about 3,000.
They are slightly worried after what happened this year when they didn't have a replacement for Massa.
Yeah.
And they've learned from that, and they're never going to forget it. And so now they've signed up pretty much all of Italy.
Well, I think we counted it was 6 drivers so far, because Jules Bianchi, or Bianchi, I don't know how you say that.
Bianchi, I believe.
He tested for them on the Tuesday, and they signed him up for a long-term deal on the Wednesday.
It wasn't that good.
Just one day's testing. There's no defined role, so he's not a tester officially, but he's there if they need him.
Of note, I think Jonathan Summerton is targeting the wrong team.
Yes.
With that business with AirAsia. He should just be getting on the phone to Ferrari. That's signing him up. That's signing anyone up.
It was also interesting that Baguette tested for Renault, and then he switched to the Sauber team.
Just to confuse us.
Yeah.
Not sure that's ever happened before. It may have. Somebody may remember sometime back in distant past. However, the guy starts off with Renault, then he jumps ship and ends up in BMW. I'm not totally sure that's a step up, but it was more running for the man.
I did like reading the quotes that the drivers came out with after their day of testing. On the first day, Andy Suchek for Williams was fastest, and he said, "I have to say, I'm really positive because I have a lot of help from Spain, lots of good sponsors. My manager and team are doing a great job in discussions with different F1 teams. I'm pretty sure we can be on the grid next year."
Ooh.
That is very confident.
That's a surprise. Is he on our list? Is he on our list of potential drivers? I guess he must be. I don't know where he's going to end up, though.
Gary Paffett was fastest for McLaren on the second day. He was not quite so confident. He said, "It seems like most of the new teams require you to have a fair few million pounds in the bank or that much sponsorship to give the team, so it's more difficult to get a race seat even though there's more available. The teams are struggling budget-wise and it's not easy to lay your hands on a lot of money. We've been looking at opportunities, but there don't seem to be that many available."
Slightly more realistic.
Yes. And Ricciardo was fastest on the last day, although his Renault engine did go boom at the end of the day. That wasn't good for them.
Yes, he put a lot of miles on that engine, though.
Yeah. He said, working within a Formula One team was completely different to anything I've ever experienced, but it was really good. I think I adapted quite well and understood that there are a lot of people and that they've all got their purpose within the team. We all got along and had a good 3 days together.
I did like, there was a tweet from the Red Bull F1 spy, and he said, the first thing on our list to do is all decide how we're going to say the name, and I'm going to report back and tell you what happens later. And he never came back.
Ah, so they couldn't decide.
We can only conclude they never decided how to pronounce the guy's name, and they're still thinking about it now.
He did come up with Disco Dan, though.
That's pretty awesome. So Disco Dan is a good name.
This week was really the week of nicknames, wasn't it? We've come up with loads for our new drivers.
Well, it was new information for us, and what did we come up with?
Well, Souček became Soup Chef.
Nice.
Because I couldn't work out how to pronounce it, and that's the best way we could come up with. We had Esteban Gutierrez, or however you say that. He is Gloria Esteban.
Yes.
I think that's brilliant. Mm. Lucas Degrassi becomes Delicious.
Luca Delicious.
Yeah.
Right.
And Oliver...
You came up with that one, I'm sure. That was your doing.
Yeah. And Oliver Turvey, he's called Topsy. Topsy-turvy, that's brilliant.
That wasn't one of ours, though.
We didn't come up with that. McLaren came up with that. But it's so brilliant because I didn't see it coming. And then you read it and it's like so obvious, yes, as well.
That's what we need. We need new drivers because we need new nicknames. That's what we've been missing in Formula One all this time. So bye-bye, Kimmy. We're done with that. We're done with the whole ice cream thing. We don't need to go back to that anymore. We've got new people.
It's all about Disco Dan.
All about Disco Dan.
Yeah. Apart from the drivers, they were actually testing cars out there as well, weren't they?
What did they learn? What did they achieve?
I don't know much about the cars, but the tyres were different.
They were smaller. Slightly thinner.
Is that 2010 tyres?
It's to stop the requirement. The Formula One teams last year had to put an awful lot of weight bias forward. And load up the nose and the front section of the car in order to get the front tyres to work, and which it was a silly idea, and Bridgestone knew it was a silly idea, but by the time they figured out and realised it was too late, so for next year they're making the tyres smaller, or they're making the width smaller, and therefore that should mean the weight bias can move backwards a bit, which is how it should be, and so the teams were testing, I guess they were putting on the tyres and seeing how they reacted to their current chassis, and then moving the weight around to see what they could do with it.
And talking of tyres and wheels, it made you very happy that Ferrari weren't running their stickers.
Oh, I hate...
Yes, we know.
Those stupid wheel bin stickers that make the wheel look like it's not really turning when it is, yeah, all the time. I've hated them since the day they were introduced, and I am not sorry to see the back of them. And I'll be honest with you, the Ferrari looked better without them. So
it did.
Yay for regulation changes. Finally, somebody makes a change that is for the better of everybody. Me especially.
They were also carrying ballast, weren't they? Because they don't have the big fuel tanks for next year where they have to run a whole race on one fuel tank.
Because refueling is banned next year, they need bigger fuel tanks, and drivers need to get used to how that feels. And obviously the engineers need more information on how that's going to work. So some of the cars, we're not sure which ones were running overweight.
That is pretty much all I noticed about the cars. Out there, it really was all about the drivers and the new names and everything. And I did think it was good to see lots of the younger drivers tweeting and
that's true,
connecting with their fans
because they're younger and they get this newfangled technology business, you see.
Yeah. Hildebrand, Conway, Degrassi, Esteban, they all had tweets. I mean, they weren't tweeting from the car, obviously,
but they were tweeting from the pit lane and in the evening when they were free.
My first bit of feedback actually came to us via our new contact form.
Yay.
Now, I think we might have brought this up when we did the competition.
Briefly.
Top Gear. But on the About page on the brand new site, there is a contact form if you can't remember our email address or you don't want to contact us any other way.
It's for people who are either scared of the comments or don't want to publicly comment for whatever reason. You can privately leave us a message, and we can find it and we can read it out, and it's also useful if you want to put something to us which you specifically want to feature in the show, because if you comment it, then it gets people respond to it and it will disappear. If you specifically want something to be read out or to feature something we might be interested in, then this is the way to do it, and it's sidepodcast.com/about.
This is from John, and it's on the subject of refueling. He says, hello, love the podcast, but just having a listen to you commenting on the current batch of F1 drivers and their experience with starting races on full tanks. Rubens Barrichello has started F1 races on a full tank as he made his debut in 1993. Refueling was not introduced until 94, so he has a single seasoned experience of it. Keep up the good work, John.
Thank you, John. You know what's slightly shocking about this, though? Not that we didn't know this, but the person who told us that nobody in the field had started on full tanks before was Ross Brawn.
Yeah.
And he is the man who should most know what Rubens is capable of.
That is a good point.
Which is slightly worrying. Also in the comments, Stephen just pointed out that the reason the feedback form exists is actually for Frank Montagny, who couldn't contact you and had to sign up to our wiki
in order
to get something to you. So really, it's a Frank form.
If Frank is listening and would like to contact me again.
Yes, there's a
form now
just for him. Thank you for leaving that message, John. And big up the Barrichello for having 1 year's experience over everybody else.
You can also contact me via email, though. That option hasn't gone away, christine@sidepodcast.com. Joel sent me an email saying, "Dear Sidepodcast, I have recently begun following F1 and must say that I'm very impressed with your podcast and webpage. I, too, share your feelings regarding the Valencian street circuit. I'm curious as to why Valencia insisted on using such a rubbish circuit to represent their city when there's a fantastic track on the other side of town. If Valencia really does keep a Grand Prix, why not move it to the Ricardo Tormo circuit? In my humble opinion, I think that this would be a welcome addition to the F1 calendar. Lots of fast-flowing corners and overtaking opportunities. I won't even begin to go into the changes in driver lineup for next year, as that would be a whole other email altogether.
Oh, no, do.
Best wishes, Joel." I was going to say, please send me that email.
Yes.
Or voicemail, 01212887225.
That's
01212887225.
Okay, so a couple of points touched on there. Valencia, regarding Ricardo Tormo, Alonso, at the time when the Valencian street circuit was first announced, I believe...
He did say, didn't he?
He was surprised that they decided not to use the circuit. I think the excuse was it isn't safe enough for F1 standards. I believe that there aren't enough runoffs or it won't pass FIA homologation. They do test there, though. They test the Formula 1 cars there, but apparently they don't wish to race there. My argument was, though, and still is, I don't know why they don't use the City of Arts and Sciences as
where they pretended it was going to be.
Yeah, well, if you look at the official Formula One website, Bernie's home on the web, if you look at, through the calendar of this year's races, most of the circuits use a shot of the track in question. So Australia, you see Albert Park, Monaco, you see the swimming pool section or whatever. When you get to Valencia, it's just a very nice and gorgeous picture of the City of Arts and Sciences, nothing to do with where the racetrack is really held. And you get the impression that Bernie's just as embarrassed about it as we are, and I don't know why they don't run it around the nice part of the city.
I also think another reason that they don't use the circuit, the specific circuit outside of the city centre, is because Bernie likes street circuits, doesn't he?
He likes the people being close to the track. He likes the fact that people can't ignore it. And where you've got a track like Bahrain, which is just out in the middle of absolutely nowhere, people can pretend that the race isn't going on. Whereas if you've got a circuit like Montreal, people in the offices, they can't ignore the noise of Formula One cars. So you can't say, "Oh, I didn't know that was going on this weekend," because you just can't ignore that god-awful din that's coming from across the city.
Having said that, he's also not a fan of the fact that people get to watch it for free from their building. So I guess he can't quite make up his mind.
No. Lou in the comments did point out you can't run a race around the City of Arts and Sciences because there isn't enough room. Although Toyota did for a PR stunt, did run a car through the middle of it on whatever access road they
got.
You must
be able to get a bit closer to it.
It just needs to be in the background, anything other than a godforsaken dockyard.
My final email this week comes from Bob. He said, "Hi, Christine. Just thought that I would drop you a quick note regarding tremaining. My son recently started school and has started to learn phonics. One of these is for the sound R, which, when you listen to the CD we were given, is tremaining of the first order."
Okay.
Keep up the side podcast thing. It is very much appreciated. Bob. Now, he sent me a clip.
What?
"See my puppy rip the rag,
What?
There you go.
What was that?
It's helping children to learn phonics by going "rrr."
Play that again. My brain just exploded live on air. What?
"See my puppy rip the rag, rrr, rrr. See my puppy rip the rag when he pulls so hard."
I don't know where Bob's children are going to school, but I can guarantee David went there too. That is absolutely magical. Wow. You kept that for me, didn't you? You wouldn't let me hear that before.
It was a surprise.
What an absolutely awesome email. Thank you, Bob.
RG's put in the comments, "Side podcast, ever the educational bunch."
Er.
Housekeeping.
We have been up to a lot this past fortnight, haven't we?
Busy.
Because we didn't do a show doesn't mean we weren't doing anything.
Non-stop. Absolutely mental. What have we been up to? Remind me.
Well, since the 1st of December, we started the Advent Calendar podcast.
Right.
Yeah. Whose silly idea was it to do 25 podcasts?
That would be yours.
Oh, yeah.
If it was my idea, you would have never agreed to doing this. This is the longest mini-series in the world.
In the world. It is. So 25 short shows, just like a normal mini-series, about 3 minutes each. And it runs through the 2009 season. So we started at the very beginning with Braun being fast in testing. And so far, as of this recording, we've got to the Spanish Grand Prix.
It's a good reminder because I clearly don't have the greatest memory in the world and I've already forgotten a lot of what's happened this year.
It's a good way of commemorating the season. It's our season review, basically.
It is in advent calendar format.
Yes. Also, this week we had daily guest posts,
which was a new thing, which I thoroughly enjoyed. So now, thank you to everybody who's taken part in that.
Absolutely. That isn't guest posts about any old subject. This is the daily post written by a guest writer, because every day I post a few links and just a little bit of chatter, which is where the off-topic stuff goes in the conversation.
Absolutely.
On
the
site.
If you've got something to talk about that is not Formula One related, the daily post is your best friend. But you obviously you get us started every day.
And every
you have been
single
doing that
day.
For the best, well, for over a year now, hasn't it? You've been writing these posts. And so you delegated some of that work to numerous people, and they put in a fantastic effort, I thought.
The anniversary was in November. And I needed a break because a year's worth of posts every single day was quite a lot.
Aww.
So I thought, how about throw it open? And for a week, we'll have a different guest writer every day. And they were all brilliant.
Great
we
response.
Had RG, Gavin, James, Lukey, Lewis, Maverick, and you.
I had a go.
Yeah, it took you a while and
I
you were late.
I thought I'd best do my part, yes.
But they were all good. So I recommend checking them out because there are some links that you wouldn't necessarily find from me.
When would you consider doing it again in the future?
Absolutely. We had a great response and I think there are probably more people that would want to have a go. So we will definitely be doing that again
good
in the future.
Stuff.
While we're talking about guest posts, we also had a guest podcast last week.
That's a first.
Yep.
Never done that before.
That is the first
very,
time.
Very, very well received.
Yeah, Stephen wrote some really good guest posts for us earlier in the year, and we thought they would sound excellent as audio.
Yes, we did. And would you believe it? We were right.
Yeah, we...
He's an excellent speaker.
We volunteered him to read out his posts to us, a bit like Jack and Ori.
Oh, it was much better than Jack and Ori. I learned something from these.
There were five of them, and they covered us last week when we didn't do a show.
Yes.
But if you missed them, we recommend that you check them out.
Absolutely. If even if you read the original posts, I think he brought the stories to life as we expected he would do, and he didn't let us down. And if you haven't heard them, you've missed out.
Whilst we're talking about things that happened quite a long time ago on the site, like the original Stephen Roy guest posts, also we did a SidePod Science Challenge, didn't we?
A long time ago. Was that this year?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but after the British Grand Prix, we took it upon ourselves to test out the science behind Ultimate Fuels.
Oh, yes. What a wonderfully in-depth scientific experiment it was.
Yeah, we just drove around a bit.
And then we talked about it.
Yeah.
That was the depth of it, I believe.
We were lucky to be guests of Shell at Free Practice on Friday, and they told us lots and lots of good stuff about V-Power fuel. Now, we couldn't remember any of it.
Because we're useless.
Yeah. So we asked for your questions and put our questions to one of the experts at Shell.
Yes. We had lunch with David in the Silverstone paddock, and he gave us so much information, too much information for us to take in. So we put these questions to him, and thankfully he was kind enough to answer them, because I'm sure a lot of the questions were well beneath him. But if you'd like to know all sorts of complicated and in-depth and really scientific answers to the nature of premium fuels, then the Q&A with David is on the website now.
We will put a link in the show notes. Now, it's time that we asked you to do something, I think. On the last show, we brought up the subject of the 2009 season reviews montage and asked you to send yours in via voicemail or send me an MP3 to christine@sidepodcast.com. We haven't really had that many.
No, really?
But at the time, we hadn't put a deadline on it, so I think...
Lazy, lazy listeners. That's what it is.
Perhaps...
It's all take with these people.
Perhaps if we gave them a deadline, it might spur some people on a bit.
Okay.
We have set the 14th of December.
We have. Okay, are we going to bully people into ringing in?
Absolutely.
Is that what's going to happen? Okay.
It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be short. It can be whatever you want. It can be what about whatever you want.
The thing with a season review is, even if you didn't watch everything that happened, most Formula One fans will have some recollection of what happened this year.
Yes.
Really, I mean, the season is only literally just finished. We're barely into the off season. Everybody, and I mean every single person, can contribute to this because everybody must have an opinion on what they've seen this year.
If you can't remember anything about the year, it's unlikely you'd be listening to this show, really.
That's true. And even if you can't, there's a season review in advent calendar format put out every day for you.
That's true.
Just to jog your memories.
I'm there. Helping you along.
What a coincidence.
So leave your thoughts on the voicemail 01212887225, or if you can record yourself, you can send me an email, christine@sidepodcast.com, and please do it, because it's not going to make the best podcast if it's just me doing my season review
I insist that we can do a better job than we did last year, and last year's was absolutely brilliant.
It was brilliant.
Now, we know from having done SciPod Radio this year that people are talented. People can speak out loud. People can ring in their suggestions. They can put their thoughts together, and they can produce actual radio-worthy shows. So what we're asking for is something really, really, really small and really insignificant by comparison. And fingers crossed that you put your thoughts down and you let us have them.
We are good at encouraging people to do things, because Stuart has posted a few times on our site.
Plenty of times. Lots of guest posts from Stuart.
Guest writer. But we have encouraged him to get his own piece of the web. And he's done that now after a few technical difficulties.
He's up and running.
He's up and running with stuartcodling.com. And there are blog posts on there already.
It's highly, highly, highly recommended. Stuart is a fantastic writer. I think he's the only person who's ever sent you a guest post that you never checked, right? Never need to check any spelling or grammar. Any of Stuart's posts.
It is very true. He emailed me a guest post and said, I am getting my own blog, I promise. And I said, well, while I do want to encourage you to get a blog, also, I really like getting your posts because I don't have to do anything to them.
He has a really good question for, I think, his first blog post on his new blog. And he's going to the Motorsport Business Forum this coming week.
In Monaco,
which is all right for some. I'm not in any way jealous whatsoever. However, just a tiny little bit. We can be there by proxy though, because he is asking his commenters to ask him any questions that he should ask people at the Motorsport Forum in Monaco next week. Does that make any sense?
What?
Not really.
He's asking us for questions that he can put to them.
To a number of panels. So
we'll put a link to the Motorsport Business Forum website, because it tells you who's appearing there.
Lots and lots of really important people.
Ron Dennis, Max Mosley, lots of people.
James Allen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Stuart's going to be there. So if you've got questions, you can put them on his website, stuartcodling.com.
Worth checking out. Just not only for that post, though. Generally, it's going to be a great place to find out Formula One news and opinions.
His guest posts on our site have been very insightful.
Yes, very well received.
The Motorsport Business Forum is coming up this week, but also after that, everyone goes to the FIA Gala, don't they? Is that also in Monaco?
First, there's a World Motorsport Council meeting, I believe, to sort out loads of technical things about engine homologation and complicated things that no one's really interested in. That happens first.
Right.
So expect a bunch of press releases and news coming from that.
So there'll be news from the business forum.
Yep.
There'll be news from the World Motorsport Council meeting.
Check.
And there'll be news, well, not really news, because we know that Jensen's won.
Yes.
But there'll
be
FIA
an
Gala.
Awards ceremony with Jensen and his lovely lady by his side. Braun will be there, which, you know, there will be no atmosphere whatsoever between Jensen Button and his team boss. I'm sure it'll be completely amicable on that stage. He'll get the trophy and he will officially be named world champion.
It's
2009.
A busy week for news next week,
isn't
it? It's
absolutely crazy. But what can you do? Formula One never, ever stops these days. It's 24/7. It's non-stop. There's always news. And I can't believe we get away with doing a podcast every other week.
At the beginning, I said I liked the fortnightly podcasting thing, and it's going to be like that again, because next week there is no show.
Okay, and why not?
Because we're going to a party.
A real life party.
A Christmas party.
A SciPod party.
Yes. Your host of the Parade Lap, Alex, is hosting a Christmas party in real life in that London.
In that London, our fair capital city.
Yes.
The invite is open to anybody, but it is guest list only.
Yeah, there's a page on the wiki, which we'll put in the show notes, where you sign up, and Alex will give you his address. We're obviously not going to say it.
That would be slightly unfair.
Yeah.
If you know, hundreds and thousands of listeners descended on his house. So I can understand why that might be. If you are a listener and you do fancy coming along, sign up to the wiki, add your name, and we'll look forward to meeting you there. But for anyone who can't make it, for all those people who live overseas, who maybe think it's a little bit far to come for a beer.
Although, you know, it is going to be a good party.
I mean, it's so a worthwhile trip.
It's worth the plane fare.
I would encourage anybody to come. But if you decide you'd rather stay at home on the other side of the world, there will be a virtual party in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that will be our next podcast in 2 weeks' time, the Side Pod Party, which is a live stream of the podcast where we do the Side Poddy Awards.
Oh, yes.
Like we did last year. But it's also a party where we may sing a song, give some presents, get a bit drunk.
Yes, last year's was fantastic.
Yeah, last year we had a panda invasion.
Oh, yes.
And I got to play with some Lego.
Which was perfect. We also did...
It was rocking.
Yes. We also had a bit of a sing-along, which we're going to be doing again this year.
Yeah. This year we're doing Jingle Bells and we are rewriting the lyrics.
With an F1 slant.
Yeah, there's a wiki page for that as well.
What a surprise.
Yeah, if you've got any ideas for some lyrics, you can put them on that page. I'll link to it in the show notes. But we do need voices.
Oh, yes. Well, now, last year the voices really made the 12 Days of Christmas, didn't they?
Yes.
I think we may need to hear what that sounded like, just as a bit of a reminder for anyone who may have forgotten.
8 points positions.
7 different winners.
6 wet races.
Five 4 Highfield podiums.
3 maiden winners.
2 teams are leaving.
And a last quarter championship win.
The end of it's like, win, win, win.
Tell me why we are agreeing to do this again.
It doesn't matter if you can sing or if you can't sing, if you can be in time or not.
You just have to be willing to ring in.
That is the best thing we've ever done.
We're never going to top that. Jingle Bells cannot top that, although there are some good lyrics. I've seen some of the lyrics. Some of the original verses are very good.
We want to try.
Oh, yes. Okay, so that's in 2 weeks' time. Be around, be near your phone, be willing to call in, because we absolutely want everybody. If you can't make next week's party, then we insist you're on the phone and you sing a verse or you sing a line of the chorus of Jingle Bells, because that is going to be unmissable.
Now, to finish the show, we've actually got some proper music. While we were doing the live stream, Nikki came up with the theme tune for Disco Dan.
I like a Formula One driver with his own theme tune.
Nikki's friend from school, I think, Julie Mahendran, has a song called There Must Be Disco.
And it sounds perfect for Disco Dan. Can we have a listen to that?
I will play you a clip.
Okay, and we shall say goodbye?
Yeah, I think it could be our outro as well.
Sounds good to me. What a fantastic 2 weeks in Formula One. Let's hope the next 2 weeks bring us as much joy and entertainment as these two.